Hello, everyone. This is Trey Olds from the Trey Olds Radio Show and my friend Bob Thibodeau from the Kingdom Crossroads podcast does great work with his ministry. I've done interviews with him and he is just great. God bless you all.
Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello everyone everywhere, this is Pastor Robert Thibodeau, and I want to welcome you to the Kingdom Crossroads podcast for today. We are so encouraged by your reviews and comments when you listen to these great guests that are blessing you with these outstanding interviews. And I want to encourage you to continue to share your feedback with us. Amen. Now, if you're a business owner, a nonprofit manager, a church pastor, ministry leader, heading up any organization that requires you to have a board of directors, today's program is going to be especially important for you to listen to. We're going to be receiving some vital information on how you and your organization can achieve greater things by having the right people on your board of directors. Now, that being said, if you're not managing or operating any of these organizations, this interview will still be a blessing to you. I guarantee it. Because if you will pay attention and apply what's being shared, you could put yourself into a position of furthering your own career as well. Today's guest is Nancy May. She's the CEO with Board Bench Companies. Nancy works with CEOs and directors of public and private companies, their shareholders, owners, and yes, even their customers, and take them to a higher level. She also coaches talented executives who have the desire to serve on a board of directors, but are either stuck in how to achieve their goal or don't know what will make or break them in the process of trying to achieve their desire to have a seat on a board they're dreaming about. Nancy's also served on the advisory boards of emerging high-growth consumer goods and technology companies. She served on the board of directors of the Connecticut Girl Scout Council, where she chaired the nominating committee. She also served on the boards of many international and regional women's organizations, including the International Women's Forum, the American Women's Economic Development Corporation, the founding chapter of the World Affairs Council, a Global Women's Issues Forum, and many others. She is a current member of the Economic Club of New York, the Financial Women's Association, HR People and Strategy, and the World Affairs Forum. Nancy's been honored by many government and industry organizations for her work in support of women and was named as the 1998 Connecticut Women's Business Advocate of the Year and was invited to meet President Clinton as one of the nation's top business leaders. In case you didn't get it, I can already sense this is going to be a great interview already. Help me welcome to the program, Nancy May. Nancy, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today.
My pleasure, Pastor Bob. Thank you for having me here as your guest. Boy, I mean, I don't know that person.
Well, I know you're super busy because it took us a little while just to carve this time out together. And I want you to know I do appreciate you coming on the program.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Amen. Well, other than that first the first question I always ask, other than that very impressive bio I just read, I want you to tell us in your own words, who is Nancy May?
Oh, let me see. I'm just a little old girl hanging up here in Connecticut. Nancy, let's see. How do I describe myself? I grew up in Long Island, New York, and was one of two daughters of my mom and dad, and we moved up to Massachusetts when I was a junior in high school. My dad had a family business that he took over from his father, and I learned a lot about business from watching him over the years. And to this day, I said, Dad, he taught me a whole heck of a lot, so thanks. And he's 98 years old.
Wow, amen. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Both mom and dad. Mom's 89 with some dementia issues, but she's still there and gives me hell when I need it.
That's what parents are all about.
You got it.
How did you get started in all this, or should I say end up doing what you're doing now?
Sure. That's a pretty easy question. Actually, I started a career in the corporate world with the old online services back in the day when it was still green text on a black screen. And as a friend of mine says, she's got a Facebook group. She said, Nancy, you have to join it with me. And the title is, I've been online before you were born. And I was like, Michelle, I'm not sure I want to be able to admit that, but yes, that's true of many. But after the corporate world, I had actually had left a corporation, a very large corporation that I thought was having some ethical issues in the division that I was serving. And my exit speech to the divisional head was, Tom, it's been a pleasure and privilege working with you. I can no longer personally or professionally represent you or the organization. I'm afraid it's going to hurt my reputation. Thank you. Goodbye. And when you think about morals, I stuck to my morals, and he was shocked, and I explained what was happening, and I started out on my own business, and that was now 30 years ago.
Wow.
My fiance, now, certainly husband at that time, pulled a long extension cord out on to the back deck of a little apartment that we were renting, and I did the one ringy dingy.
Cell phones back then.
No. Actually, I remember the first cell phone I had. Oh my God! I thought I just found a new form of religion, shall we say?
I know. I can remember when my first real step up in the technology communications world was when I had a pager. Oh man, I thought that was awesome.
I never got the pager. It was the cell phone, and it had to be red with just the color of my, my corporate colors. So everything had to be matchy. But anyway, I've built a strategy and consulting business, and eventually the CEOs of clients that I was working with saying, geez, you really think differently. We like the way you've been able to help us work through and think through problems that we've got. Could you help us in the boardroom? And I thought, heck yeah, it's a lot easier to work at the top of the house than the bottom of the house. So open the door and let me in.
Amen.
And that's kind of where the boardroom work, started. It was not something I particularly went out after. It came after me.
Amen.
And so that's, now over 15 years ago.
Yeah, that's great. Now, because of the two ministries that I head up, I'm familiar with the board of directors concept. And I also worked with the American Red Cross for a time and had to prep for several board meetings with them as well.
But And
for those that are not familiar with the need for a board of directors, can you explain what the main function of a board of directors, what they basically accomplish as it relates to business? What do they do?
Sure. This is a broad brush because, boards are a little different in a family business versus, let's say, a startup business versus a not-for-profit and, a public company.
Right.
But in general, they all function to provide guidance and oversight support to a CEO and a management team to make sure the company is working on the straight and narrow profitably. And that even goes with not-for-profit organizations because, as they say, if you're not making money, you cannot serve the mission of your organization.
Right.
And you're not out there to make millions of windfalls, but the more money that you make in the not-for-profit environment, the more you can serve.
Right.
So that's sort of the simplest explanation of what a board of directors is.
Okay. Now, do all companies need a board of directors, or is it only the multi-million, billion-dollar companies?
I'm a firm believer that every company can benefit from a good board of directors. In fact, when I started out in business on my own, I built my own advisory board right from the scratch, almost from the beginning. I got, friends that I knew that I trusted and respected their advice and said, hey, folks, I'd really like to have you in a more formal way. Be there for me and I could call on you. And so that's what I did from almost day one.
Amen. Why is it important that each position on the board of directors be filled with a person who's what's the word I'm looking for? Let's just say competent in the position being filled. Do you find that sometimes an organization just has friends and acquaintances filling seats, you know, the good old boy network?
Oh, the good old boy network rules strong. And it, you know, it can be, it can work in some cases, and other cases it can blow up in your face. And, you know, the old adage, trust but verify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think goes very strong. And unfortunately, a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot of birds, but, you know, a good number of people will know, you know, friends on the golf course or in other social situations. But when you come and take that person into a more trusted environment where they have to help critique a situation, things can change and become uncomfortable for you if it's not the right person who knows how to give guidance, or if in fact what you see on the surface is really what's not down deeper in the lower layers of what they are capable and competent of doing. So my recommendation is that it's great to have friends that you have, you know, go to the friends for the information that you need when you need it. But a board of directors really takes the whole level of what you need to a different and higher plane.
So if a business owner, nonprofit, church ministry, et cetera, they decided to set up a board of directors, what should that person do to build this organization's board? You know, not just put one together, but to actually build a functioning board.
So that's a little different, because typically an organization like that will draw its board from its members, its constituents, its congregation. And if you've already got, let's say, some kind of board there already, the real key first to look at making that board stronger is to first decide what are the roles and responsibilities of the board, and what committees do you have, and why do you have them? You know, what is the purpose? What is it that you want from those group of individuals? And that's good for the institution to know and set, this is what we actually need and want, and why. And it's also good for the people who are on the board to say, these are the guidelines that I am to work within. And if there's any question of where to go with outside that realm, you can have that discussion together with the management team as to why it makes sense. So one example might be, let's say there's a decision to, you know, acquire a new property, and you want to expand a church or ministry facility. So you might need a special group of people to say, how do we do our due diligence on that investment decision? It might not be the people that are currently on the board. You may need a whole other group of individuals with a different type of expertise. But being very specific and very focused on exactly what you need and why is important and critical to both sides, as well as terms limits. You know, you don't want everybody on there. I call boards in some cases the only death do you part job, because there's a way for them to keep going on and on and on and on. And quite frankly, you know, people can be on a board too long sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned, you know, using members of the congregation and things like that. I'm just getting your opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that go back to the, you know, just filling the seats concept? You know, well, we have to have seven people, and, you know, I just, you know, any volunteers, you know, type thing on a Sunday morning church service, and, you know, you get your volunteers there. Is there really a vetting process when you do it like that?
No, that's, I call that how to get yourself in trouble speech. But, you know,
but you see that all the time.
I know. You don't know what you get till, you know, all of a sudden the environment gets a little hot and sticky, and then, you know, the hairs grow up in the back of the neck, and people are fighting, and you end up with a difficult situation. You say, how do we get rid of Sally and Bob? Yeah. They were so nice beforehand.
I've heard it. Oh, I've heard it. Yeah.
So you know, one way to really look at, you know, calling for volunteers, I call it the try before you buy model, in this kind of environment, is to create committees where people are actually engaged in in a particular service of that board. So let's say you are having a big fundraising event, right? Mm-hmm. And there might be a fund development committee, you know, where you're soliciting for money and resources for the organization. And part of that might be a big gala. I'm using that as an example because we did that certainly with Girl Scouts and other not-for-profits that I've been involved in. And you ask for volunteers there. Well, you're going to find out pretty quickly, you know, who's competent in counting the money, you know, who's competent in making the ask, who's the good organizer. And there you can start seeing on the surface level where sort of the, you know, the rubber meets the road on the individuals in a case like that. So that's why I call it the try before you buy scenario. And then you can do some testing and then talk further about true competencies of somebody. But if you have somebody who's not financially literate, you don't want them helping you with finances
right. On
an organization. You know, they don't even know how to balance their checkbook, and you're trying to say we need to raise money, and where'd the money go?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Now, what should the CEO of the organization, that's you, look for when searching for a new person to join an existing board? You already have the board and somebody's leaving, retiring, whatever the case may be. What should you look for in a new person?
Well, the first thing I would do is really look at the long-term projected either growth or strategy of the organization. Where do you want to take that organization and why? And then what are the competencies, the skills that you need to help you get there as a CEO? And look at the board that you already have and say, all right, Kate, you know, Joe fills this area of expertise. We might need somebody who understands technology. So, you know, Joe's got some technology, but we already need a backup if Joe gets hit by a bus. You know, he may only know one area of technology. Maybe we need Sally to help us with some other areas. We're in the investment area because we want to maintain an endowment for the organization. So how do we make sure that that is properly managed? So you need, you know, Bob and Jim and Jane to help you in finances, and maybe they're not up to stuff in what's going on in that particular scope of the world. So you say, okay, we're a little weak in finances. Or maybe you need community outreach. Who are the really good schmoozers, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And know how to actually close a sale or execute on that. So you look at what you need to actually get you there, and you put them in buckets and say, where are your strengths and weaknesses? Who's about to come off a term, and where do you need to fill those holes and gaps? And that's where you sort of start saying, all right, here's where we need to go. Where do we need to, you know, where can we build from there? And you start interviewing and finding out what's going on inside that institution or that organization of members or your congregation. And there may be even people on the outside that you want involved too, which is probably a little foreign to, let's say, a church community that is fairly close-knit. But having somebody on the outside may actually be an advantage because they have no allegiance other than to make sure that you survive and do really well.
Yeah, that's true. When we formed our ministry board for the radio station and all that, we have 1, 2, 3, 4. We got 5 different churches represented. So it's not all from one, little clique where you're interacting on a continuous, weekly basis.
Right.
You got different churches, different denominations. So that you get the big perspective on things. And I did that intentionally so that it wouldn't become a Baptist radio station or Presbyterian radio station or whatever. It's a interdenominational board. It's an interdenominational, interdenominational radio station. So, I found that it worked really well.
You get very different perspectives. It opens your mind to the opportunities and the possibilities that are there, and that's a great way to do that.
Amen. Now, have you found there's a lot of people that want to serve on a board of directors? And if so, why? I mean, what's their primary motivation?
There are probably more people who want to serve on boards than there are board seats available.
Why is that such a popular thing?
There are a couple of reasons. In fact, I was doing a podcast interview with a friend yesterday, a fellow that I know who's a an expert, global expert in directors and officers liability and insurance. And he said the same thing. He said, I know I help these people, you know, with their liability positions, but I know so much about that. There's like no way on earth am I going to serve on a board. So he said, CYA, no board service for me.
But, you know what? Sometimes when you peek behind the kimono, you don't like what you see.
Yeah, TMI. Exactly. So, you know, there are a couple of reasons why, or there are a number of reasons, good reasons why people want to serve. And then there are a number of reasons I sort of cross my eyes and go, you actually said that? So, on the not-for-profit front, you know, there are some really good people who want to serve a mission of an organization or get some board experience. And I always caution people who are looking to get some board experience and saying, you know, not-for-profit may be a way to do that, is to say, make sure that you are absolutely passionately committed to the mission and purpose of that organization or the community that it serves. Don't even consider joining a not-for-profit or mission-driven organization unless you have that true inner commitment. End of story. Mm-hmm. You will know how much work it takes by serving on a good not-for-profit board, because it's not easy work. And especially because typically in a not-for-profit, you are getting no remuneration for it. That's right. So you better love it, right?
Yeah, that's right. I tell my board, I can't pay you, but I can buy you dinner.
Right. Better be a good dinner.
That's right. Yeah, we always go to dinner every meeting. So.
But on the for-profit or other service side, there are a lot of really impressive and talented people out there who've had a wealth of experience in a particular area or industry or a broad range of service. And they really want to share that knowledge with somebody else and some other organization. And it gives them a way to really stretch their mind in outside the scope of where they are in their day-to-day confines, which is truly the ideal situation. However, you know, in that position, you've got to also learn how to ask questions and not just tell. That's, you know, the sign of a good board member. How do you draw the intrigue and the ideas and the solutions out of a management team or outside resources versus you have to do this because X, Y, Z. It's, you know, don't even go near somebody like that. On the other side, I've also heard what I call the, are you absolutely blanking kidding me? We flight. Yeah. Stories. I had one fellow who was the president of a very large, well-known and respected pension fund who came off and said, well, I kind of want to be on a board because, well, I've got a good pension and, you know, I don't want to touch that money for any particular outside reasons. But if I get a lot of cash by these other boards, then I've got my vacation slush fund. So now the purpose of serving on the board is to fill your pockets, not necessarily serve at a value perspective of that company. And these are for-profit institutions. So, I mean, either way, you still have to consider what is the contribution to the overall gain of that organization that you're serving and its customers, not just the shareholders. Because without a business of customers where you're getting customers coming back time and time and time again, whether they be business to business or business to consumer, you have no business. End of story.
Yeah, that's right.
Me, zero.
That's right.
Bankruptcy does not necessarily, well, bankruptcy, you know, protection, but, you know, when you have zero in and zero out, or zero in and lots out. Are up a creek without a paddle.
Yeah. Do a lot of companies, like nonprofits, et cetera, what I've found is a lot of them look to their board of directors basically as fundraisers instead of, I guess the term would be managers or oversight. You know, they're like, oh, we want you on the board. Okay, we got this huge fundraiser coming up. Go get them.
Yeah, I call that how much cash you got board.
Yeah.
So, there are a couple of ways that they will do that. You know, some large and well-known non-for-profits will say in order to serve, you have to write a check. And, you know, if you're committed to a not-for-profit, typically you're donating in some way, shape, or form, you know, either a give or get, most of them will do. And the bigger ones will just say, we don't care about what you give. It's, you know, in time and service, it's, you know, how many zeros can you add next to that check? Yeah. that's, you know, that really to me doesn't necessarily build a board that's competent always, because just because somebody's competent to write a check doesn't mean that they're competent to serve in a healthy way. So I think that there needs to be a balance and a restructuring on that. If, however, you need to do fundraising, you know, every board member in a not-for-profit should know how to say, this is our organization, this is what we believe in, we've supported it, we'd like to help show you how to support it too, and here's the benefit and why. So there should be the ability to make an ask. Yeah. And it I'm going to err, hopefully on a non-error, but say most are uncomfortable doing that. But you know, my feeling is that it's always been an opportunity to share the benefits of a really good organization with other people, if you know how to make that ask in a way that is not what I call the money-grubbing way, right?
Right, yeah. And I've seen a lot of that where it's all about the money.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. Pastor Bob here. Man, we are all out of time for today's interview with Nancy May. This is just part one of a two-part interview, and I'm telling you, she is bringing it to the table. This is one interview you need to be taking notes on. She has been recognized by numerous government and industry organizations for her work and support of women. She was even named the Connecticut Women's Business Advocate of the Year and was able to meet President Clinton as one of the nation's top business leaders. She knows what she's talking about when it comes to the organizing your board of directors, and whether it's a large corporation, CEO, whatever the case may be, small mom and pop operation, ministries, churches, if you have or need a board of directors, the information she's providing to you today and tomorrow, you need to be taking notes on, because she is giving awesome, awesome tidbits for you to use and to help grow your business as well. So come back tomorrow. Join us. We conclude our interview with Nancy May. Till then, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do. Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this: your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts, share your unique insights, and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a Faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.